Welcome to Career Buzz, Canada's unique radio conversation that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations. Everyone has a career story. They're full of ups and downs, twists and turns, good times and bad times, hopes and disappointments. But it's one thing because of another, not like a resume where it's one thing after another. Career stories show you how things connect. Career stories connect the dots. And that's what we have today on Career Buzz, two inspiring career stories, connecting the dots in other people's stories so that you can connect the dots in yours. Hi, I'm Mark Franklin, practice leader of Career Cycles. We help people make career and life choices aligned with what really matters. I'm pleased to be your host today on Career Buzz. Thanks for tuning in this morning. When unemployed social media strategist Hagen Blount was looking for work, he walked around New York City wearing a sandwich board that said, "We'll tweet for food." Plus, he posted his provocative infographic resume online and launched a social media campaign. The results? 4 job interviews, a contract with Coke, an offer to co-found a startup, and a couple of dates. Hagen Blount joins us as the second feature interview this morning. And to prepare for that interview, go to HagenBlount.com and click on resume. What do you think? But first, Elen Vukovic is Associate Dean in the Faculty of Business, Arts, and Design at George Brown College here in Toronto. She leads the Center for Business and the Center for Arts and Design. Before joining the college in 2003, she held management roles in financial services at Fidelity Investments and Mackenzie Financial. Elen enriches her career and life with volunteering, music, and sports. She was a member of the Canadian women's national volleyball team for 5 years, then played professionally in Italy for another 5 years. Elen Vukovic, welcome to Career Buzz.
Thanks, Mark. Great to be here.
So what do you like about your career these days?
I think the variety. Overall, all my life I have had the challenge of trying to figure out what is the one thing that I want to do really, really well. And in fact, would it have come to know myself that I enjoy doing many, many things, and definitely being part of the Faculty of Business, Arts, and Design at George Brown College allows me to involve myself in multiple areas of those academic program areas.
And what do you do? People see dean or associate dean. They know if they've gone to a post-secondary institution, they know the role exists. What do you do as an associate dean?
Well, we're very entrepreneurial at George Brown College. You may or may not be aware, we've pretty much doubled our enrollment in the last 10 years. It's a very thriving downtown college, and I work at the downtown campus. In my case, I'm very much involved as the associate dean. We have a very matrixed team environment in terms of our management. There is a dean, myself as associate dean, 2 academic directors, and a couple of chairs. So altogether, between that 6-person senior management team of our academic division, we're overseeing a team of faculty that ranges from 100 full-time plus 100 to 150 part-time faculty. We are leading our student services team. We're collaborating with multiple areas across the college. And because of our very decentralized structure, all of us get to be involved in multiple initiatives, whether that be being part of a project team that's working on the college's 2020 strategy, or on a committee that's looking at revising student service standards. So it's very much, I think also because I personally am a person that tries to operate in a I am not my position
yes.
Way, I have a lot of interaction with students, and also, of course, a lot of external work representing the college on external committees, which is very gratifying.
So it's a lot of variety that you've mentioned. And now we're always curious on Career Buzz to hear about people's strengths and what they draw on to really do the job that they enjoy doing. So what are your signature strengths, things that really define who you are, that you draw on to do your job well every day?
I think primarily relationship skills and that whole networking arena. That would be, I would suggest, my first area that I would point out as being an area of strength that I have built upon. I grew up in small business. Our parents had been immigrants who came to Canada and started a small motel in Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario. And so I learned firsthand the importance of you never have a second chance to make a first good impression. That's a big mantra for me. And then, of course, the other that goes hand in hand with that, communication skills, whether it's written or oral or creating visual presentations. And you know, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but that's where I think my experience in music and video production has helped me understand the power of the visual image.
We're talking to Hélène Vukovic, who's the Associate Dean in the Faculty of Business, Arts, and Design at George Brown College. Here on Career Buzz, I'm your host, Mark Franklin, on CIUT 89.5 FM. Hélène, take us back. You know, you've had this interesting story. I said in the intro you had a big sports career almost at the beginning of your career. You were on the Canadian women's national volleyball team. How did that happen?
Well, my first sport really was downhill ski racing, and by the age of 16 I had had an unfortunate accident out at Whistler competing in the junior national championships, and in the meantime I'd always played volleyball and basketball at school, but I suddenly overnight practically at the age of 17 became hugely passionate about volleyball, made it onto the Northern Ontario volleyball team, was at some tournament, got scouted, and out of the blue I received an invitation to try out for the junior national women's volleyball team at the 1976 Montreal Olympics.
Hang on, you just said out of the blue. We hear that a lot on this mm-hmm. show. People say out of the blue, or it was just happenstance or luck. Was it really out of the blue? Like, what happened that made this scout or whoever come to you and say, we want you to try out?
I really have to say it was serendipitous. At that particular moment in time, Moo Park, a huge figure in the women's Canadian volleyball scene, who had been recruited from Korea to coach the Canadian women's national volleyball team in advance of the 1976 Montreal Olympics. It was really, truly, just as today, it's very, very difficult for there to be funding for amateur sports. And so at that particular juncture, there was a fair amount of money and people having the opportunity to go around Canada and go to tournaments and find the talent. So it really was, in my particular case, I would suggest serendipitous, plus the fact that I had really not been playing for very long. I was just this really tall, strong, energetic, and never-say-die kid from Northern Ontario who became very, very, very passionate about this sport.
So what happened next with this this serendipitous moment? You got scouted, people said, why don't you try out, and then what happened?
Well, I went to Montreal for 3 days, tried out. They loved, I'm not saying that they loved, but I was seen as somebody who should be staying on and training. However, there was no funding available to pay for my accommodation, food, and so on. And at that particular moment, our parents who were running the motel did need me back working that summer. So I said, look, I have to go back, but you know, please keep me on your list for next year. And in fact, at that particular moment, I had been offered a full scholarship to Lake Superior State University in Northern Michigan, and so I went back to school in September, played volleyball, basketball, and even softball. And in the spring, I was expecting this letter in the mail that would be inviting me to the official tryout for the junior national volleyball team that would be taking place in Vancouver that spring. However, the letter did not arrive. And so I basically just sat down with a pen and piece of paper, and I think this is the lesson in terms of career management. Without anybody coaching me, my parents or anyone, I sat down and wrote a very respectful and proper letter to the executive director of the Canadian national volleyball team, who I had met at the previous year's tryouts, and asked why I had not received a ticket. Did she not remember me? And in fact, 2 weeks later, the ticket arrived in the mail, and I was on my way to Vancouver, and that summer I made the junior national volleyball team and traveled abroad and competed on behalf of Canada, and just it started the whole whirlwind experience of playing for the Canadian national volleyball team.
Great story. Thanks for sharing that. What happened, though? Like, when you sent the letter, and I appreciate that you're sharing with listeners, there's a lesson here. Sometimes you need to take charge. You need to be proactive. Make the contact. If they're not coming back to you, you go to them. But what happened? Did they forget about you? What
happened? Yes, it just fell through the cracks. It's just, again, we often underestimate in large bureaucratic institutions, and we often underestimate as well in publicly managed institutions, whether it be the Canadian Volleyball Association or a publicly funded college or a hospital. We often forget that the administrative resources are actually running quite lean and mean, and they don't necessarily have the kinds of systems and processes that you would find in place in a Fortune 500 organization. So you do need to seek first to understand, maybe they didn't receive my email. Maybe that name got somehow dropped off the list by accident. So always giving the whole situation, the institution, the people that you're hoping will be returning your calls or responding to your cover letter requests, maybe they didn't get it. Maybe it fell to the bottom of the pile. Let me give it one more try.
Good. I think that's great advice. Seek first to understand. Make the call. If you're not getting a response back to some amazing posting that you replied to, give a call. What happened? Did you receive my letter? And I think that's the lesson learned. Even when they say no phone calls, please. You're nodding. Okay, so you heard it here. What happened after that? You spent 5 years on the national volleyball team, you know, and you said traveling and all these great things that happened. And I know that there's part of the story here where you start to play professionally. How did that transition happen?
Well, one of the players on the Canadian national volleyball team, Valerie Campbell, now Valerie Duraco, she was the best, I would still say to this day, probably the best setter that Canada ever produced. And she had been, she had decided not to pursue post-secondary education. So those of us that were on the national team who were doing our university and or college credentials at the same time that we were playing on the national team, because that's very typical, we, at one point, the national team had been centered in Toronto. It got disbanded. She and I were living out in Calgary. I was playing for the University of Calgary team and completing my studies. And she had gotten an offer to play professional volleyball in Italy. And it was due to the fact that her partner at the time, Stelio Duraco, one of the best wing hitters ever that Canada ever produced, had been seen in the international tournaments, and he spoke Italian. So the volleyball scene in Italy was really developing at that moment in time. In fact, still to this day, more women play volleyball than any other sport.
Is that right? In Italy?
In Italy.
And they can do that professionally and make money from it as opposed to amateur sport.
There is a really well-developed club system with local sponsors and
wow.
so on. So I basically, at the time that my friend Val were keeping in touch, she knew that I was about to complete my business degree. And she had been talking to a coach in the town of Piacenza, which is near Milan. They needed a player slash coach. And she characterized my playing style, my character, and so on. And sent me a letter and said, you know, if they send you a ticket, will you come? And I said, you know, basically, proof's in the pudding. When I see that ticket, I think I'll be coming. But let's wait for that ticket to come. And it did.
How was your Italian at that point?
None. Zero.
Zero.
Much. Yes.
And now?
I'm completely fluent. I do also do some translations. I'm not, I don't have a degree in Italian language studies, but I can hold my own in conversation, and I do write in Italian, and I do some translations.
All right, so there's another lesson there too, I think. If you're looking for an opportunity and you have many but not all of the requirements, you can do it, and you can learn that thing that you don't have. Here, a language, a pretty big thing. You didn't have it, and you learned it.
Yes.
On the job.
I have to say, though, as well, I had taken French all through high school. I came through the public education system at the time that French as a second language was a requirement, I believe, up until at least grade 10 at that time. And so it's quite easy to, well, in my case, was relatively easy to transpose the Italian grammar if you knew enough about French
grammar.
Through
the French, yeah. And what was the career plan the whole time? You mentioned a business degree, and there may be listeners who are thinking about having a career in professional athletics. Some people have a gift, and they think, okay, I'm going to continue on with this. Other people say, I'm going to do this other thing in parallel, and I have another career idea. So what was your situation? Were you thinking professional athlete, or were you thinking that's one aspect, and I'm going to develop some other career in parallel?
I don't know if I was necessarily specifically thinking about a career, to be honest, in those early 20s. Having grown up in business, I certainly was... An industrial psychologist would probably say that I was cut out to be an entrepreneur more than anything else. But I knew that I didn't want to necessarily put in those 18 to 20 hours a day that
yes.
sometimes you have to put in if you want to be a successful entrepreneur. So it really, again, going back to something that we said earlier about serendipity and happenstance, I had been accepted to study music at University of Western Ontario straight out of high school and a couple of other places, but I received the scholarship to play volleyball, basketball, and softball, and they didn't have music as a major, so I studied business. And then, as well, I was still very interested in music, but at that age of 19, when I had made the national volleyball team, you know, you have to put in 6 hours a day, 6 days a week training.
Yes.
So I definitely, if you will, I think I understood more the notion of getting a whole bunch of experience under my belt. And it was probably not until my late 20s that I actually realized, okay, this can now somehow be shaped or parceled into a career. I think that's really what happened in my mind. And I've often, and I'm still to this day, after having worked in the financial services industry and working in the business of education, I really have a challenge being, if you will, boxed in. I'm always outside of the box.
Well, that's what careers are. They're constantly in a state of flux, or as Australian career academic Jim Bright says, there's either slow shift or fast shift. There's no stability, right? And fast shift is there's a transition and a change, but slow shift is you're doing something and the seeds of change are kind of growing while you're doing it, right?
Exactly.
And it kind of describes what your situation is.
Yeah, and I think also having grown up in business, we were the typical immigrant family where you came home from school and play was work and work was play. So while you were we were all encouraged to have all kinds of activities. If our mom needed help with chores, we did that. So we had already some very strong ingrained work habits. The three girls, my older sister Irene and my younger sister Natalie, was really ingrained in us from an early age. So I wanted a lot of different experiences.
And I think that's the thing from your story, Ellen, so far. You know, almost the purpose of your 20s, if I could say this, and tell me if you agree, is to get that experience. And you, like other guests that we've had on the show, and if listeners remember Jenny Clement's story, which was just unbelievable, a Cirque du Soleil acrobat who ended up being a family doctor, she didn't know what she was going to do until her late 20s. And all she had done was amassed an amazing amount of hugely different experiences in her 20s. And it's almost like that's the purpose of the 20s. Get a lot of experience, get some education. You can't know how the dots connect. They will connect, and trust that it'll happen.
Right. And just on a somewhat related note, just 2 days ago, we had our convocation at George Brown College, and our valedictorian for Business Arts and Design was a student who had danced for Ballet School of Canada for, I don't know, 10 or 12 years, I believe she said, and then had completed in his last 3 years a diploma in graphic design. And her story as well was compelling to me personally. I had not known that we had a student that used to be with the ballet company, and it was just amazing to hear the transition that she had made, and I imagine she'll go on to great accomplishments.
We're talking to Ellen Vukovic, Associate Dean in the Faculty of Business, Arts, and Design at George Brown College. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, here on Career Buzz 89.5 CIUT. Ellen, so you had this whole experience in volleyball, and you had been doing this degree in business, and then something clicked towards the end of your 20s, and we know there's this next part of your story in financial services. How did that transition come about? How was it to leave the world of sport?
Well, it's an interesting story there, too. I was about, I think, 28 or 29. I had just come back from Italy, was living in a little basement apartment in the beaches. It was the late 80s. Interest rates were through the roof. Unemployment rates were quite high. I had updated my resume, and I'm out there trying to get my first job, if you will, since coming back from Italy. No one was really all that interested in someone who was now fluent in Italian, had completed a business degree 5 years ago, and had been playing volleyball. So I did position myself to go to a number of agencies. And what was very interesting is at this particular agency, at that moment in time, a company by the name of McKinsey Financial Corporation was growing fairly rapidly. It was the late 80s, and mutual funds had suddenly become quite popular, and our investments in RSPs and so on. So I'm being interviewed, doing, I think, probably at that point in time, my 15th typing test or whatever interview with an agency. And while doing the typing test, the words blue leather shoes were part of the words that had to be typed. And I was, I guess, a little bit punchy by that point in time, and I replaced the words with gray suede loafers. And then in the after part where you sit with the agent to go over the results, and I was a very good typist, very highly accurate, she was reading it meticulously line by line, and when she came to the part of the gray suede loafers, she burst out laughing. And it sort of broke the ice, and it made her remember me, I think. And so she had, at that particular moment, been trying to fill a position of senior clerk in the customer service department of McKinsey Financial, so, and bilingual to boot, and I had the French. I got the job.
Nice story. Now, I don't know if there's so many lessons learned. It's just one of those little things, though, but it shows that there are these little teeny parts of the story that kind of illustrate the larger whole. It's like a fractal almost. And it's great to hear that. That's really funny. And that was the clincher to get you the job, or one of the pieces.
But it launched
a whole new chapter of your life.
Exactly. And even when I started immediately, again, that whole notion of getting to know everybody within the department, very quickly somebody had found out that I used to play volleyball. They were looking for a coach for a team. So I networked and was volunteering coaching on the side. And again, those are the things that those extra task activities, and today in academic circles, we call that co-curricular activities. People now are not only preparing an academic resume when they go out there to apply for positions, but they're preparing co-curricular resumes. So what are the things that you've done outside of that academic stream that demonstrate that you are a team player, that you take initiative, that you are interested in issues, that you will do whatever it takes? Those skills, people are looking for evidence of it.
And I think sometimes people, especially in their early career, lose sight of how powerful and valuable that is to prospective employers. And they think it's all about the marks and the degree or the diploma or the program. And of course, that's important, but it's only part of the story.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. As you said earlier, fractals, equations, I think it's about it's almost like you are telling the story of your life as you live it. And it's as if you are also painting the picture of your life. So people, when they encounter you, storytelling is just so powerful.
Yes.
Right? And we're finding more and more in all cultures, in all instances, no matter how connected we get from a technology perspective. At the end of the day, we do want some sort of digressive nature, so digressive quality. You do want to be able to, like we are doing right now, just sit side by side and chat and have a good long catch up.
And getting the story, though, and we're connecting the dots because there's the glue that holds these dots together, and a resume just never gets that. And so we need better ways to understand how people got to where they are.
Right, and that's, I'm sure it'll be very interesting to hear what Hagen has to say about how he came up with his idea.
I'm curious to find out about that as well.
In
a few minutes. Now, that chapter of your life in the financial services industry, you started from senior clerk and moved into management. What did you like about that chapter of your life and career?
Well, I think what happened, what I liked was that I acquired additional industry credentials. I did the Canadian Securities course. I then later on pursued the Partners, Directors, and Officers exam. I had the opportunity to work on a number of projects at that particular moment in time, late 80s, early 90s. You know, when you think about it, it's only a little over 20 years ago, but we were still, when I started in 1988, we were working with dumb terminals connected to the mainframe. Nobody had even word processing software.
Yes.
So I was, and I was one of these people who had very quickly wanted to get into that whole craze of, you know, upgrading and PCs and having the latest. So when the company started to make all of those tools available as well, I quickly was seen as somebody who was ahead of the curve, interested in all that stuff, if you will. And there was another department within the customer relations area that was going out and installing terminals in the regional offices across the country, and so that the companies that were selling the funds could actually do online orders. So I became part of that team, and eventually was asked to start up to work with a manager to start up the training and documentation department. So again, I think just demonstrating the degree to which I was willing to be out of the box and take on those extra task activities and learn new things. And the big reward for me specifically was it was very difficult to move up in the organization. I was getting a lot of lateral moves, and still, again, although the company was growing, the market was still quite, if you will, restrained. About mid-90s, when we really started to retool all the technologies, I sought out an opportunity to become a volunteer with an organization called the Canadian Information and Image Management Society. And it's not about wardrobe. It was about actually teaching the members how to harness imaging and workflow technologies to benefit their improvements in their processes. So I basically got involved, and with probably an additional 10 to 15 hours a week of work or volunteer work, I eventually became the president of the Toronto chapter. And that led to a lot of networking opportunities in the industry, which then ultimately led to me being recruited to Fidelity Canada.
So I think the story of volunteering, and how if you're volunteering in parallel to what you're doing and building networks and skills and how amazing that is as a career builder, and yet so few people really get that.
Right, and because a lot of times you do end up working alone. If you are running or if you are assisting a volunteer organization, you know it's not the number one priority necessarily for your volunteers to respond to the email or join the meeting or go to the events. So you have to sometimes work three or four times as hard as you would in a paying job to get those results. But you do find out just how capable you are if you end up for yourself, by yourself, for example, doing the agenda, pulling together all the speakers, developing the brochure, whatever. Then you yourself now have that skill and you can market that.
By the time you finished that chapter of your career story in the financial services, where had you arrived?
A senior manager in the for Fidelity Canada. That would have been about in the late 90s, early 2000s. So I would have been not an executive, but somebody who would be, if you will, seen as having leadership potential to move into those circles eventually.
Mm. We're talking to Hélène Vukovic here on Career Buzz. I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Hélène is the Associate Dean in the Faculty of Business, Arts, and Design at George Brown College. Hélène, take us to this next turning point. So you spent now, we've kind of covered two broad chapters, the sort of sports chapter of your career in life and then the financial services chapter. What happened to bring on this most recent change?
Well, the woman who had hired me at Fidelity Canada, Maureen Loweth, had subsequently she moved on to a different position, so we had never had a chance to work shoulder to shoulder. However, we had maintained very much a strong connection while we were both working at Fidelity Canada. And then she was recruited because of her volunteer association with George Brown College. She was recruited to be the dean of the Faculty of Business, Arts, and Design in 2002. And subsequently, about a year later, was very keen to ask me if I would be interested to move into that arena as well. So very much it was as a result of relationships, networking, and so on, that I had the opportunity to apply for the position at George Brown College in post-secondary education at a moment in time when that particular division was launching a plethora of new programs, a new building, wireless this, hiring faculty. It was quite an opportunity. As they say, skill building comes through opportunity. So I learned everything you wanted to know about unions but were afraid to ask. Managed, it's a multiple stakeholder model. So there, in that particular instance, I had that opportunity really to apply the skills of managing large groups, really focusing on the communication skills, and constantly learning new things, constantly learning.
It's interesting, a moment ago you said you were asked to step into this role, and then you said I had the opportunity to apply. I mean, I think listeners would love it if, you know, organizations came and knocked on their door and said, please come to our organization. How does that work, being asked to and yet still applying? What's the story there?
Well, because you do go before. In my particular instance, yes, the dean, there was a relationship, and she would have seen me as somebody who would be considered to be a strong candidate for the position, but you do have to go through several interviews, and you also go through a group interview. I recall very specifically preparing intensely. I think I probably took 2 or 3 hours to prepare my opening remarks. They give you the opportunity to make a 10-minute
presentation. Yes.
And to a group of about, I think there were 8 to 10 faculty plus the dean doing the interviewing, and they're the first thing they want to know about you is who are you? What do you think? How are you going to add value?
It's an interesting story, and I think it's valuable for listeners to consider. Your network for sure can help you get interviews, and that's the story that you're telling us. But then you stand on your own 2 feet when you're there, and you're competing with other people. So you still have to really, you know, knock them dead in the interview.
You can't take anything for granted.
Right. And that's a great story, and I think that it's really helpful for people because people are reluctant to connect and to ask for help in their career and job exploration. They can do that, but then you still have to respond and answer to the interview panel or whoever is coming up and saying, why should we hire you?
Absolutely.
Hélène Vukovic, I'd like to come back to you here just after the break. We do need to take a little bit of a break, and I'd like to start the break off with a piece of music that you brought. So can you just tell us a little bit about what you've brought for us here today?
Well, it's a CD entitled Between Breaths. It was it's 10 songs that I created to commemorate our mom turning 80. And what will be I won't go into too much depth right now. The one song that I'd like to have played right now, it's called The Seeker. And this was written, the lyrics I wrote and the music I created and recorded and so on, with my friend Chris Hess, who is a musician, composer, and producer. And this particular song is also a result or an outcome of a volunteer opportunity. I was in Bolivia in 2008, and I was very inspired to write this tune as a result of that experience.
So this is Elen Vukovic with The Seeker.
A child cries till the mother comes. It's a natural thing, it's a natural thing. A woman decides to follow her truth. There is depth to her surrender. There is depth to her surrender. A revelation comes. It's completely private.
CIUT can now be heard on channel 946 through Rogers Digital Cable.
Like what you're hearing and want more of it? Check out our schedule at CIUT.fm. We have over 80 unique programs we're sure you'll love. We're listener supported. CIUT 89.5 FM.
We're back at Career Buzz, and I'm your host, Mark Franklin. Before moving on to our next interview, I want to let listeners know about the Career and Life Wellbeing Cafe by Career Cycles. Next date is Thursday, June 23rd at Timothy's on the Danforth. More info at careercycles.com. Also, for career professionals tuning in today, the Association of Career Professionals International in the Toronto chapter should Check out the AGM. The annual general meeting is June 22. Check acpinternational.org. Click on the Toronto chapter and you can find info there. When unemployed social media strategist Hagen Blount was looking for work, he walked around New York City wearing a sandwich board that said, "We'll tweet for food." Plus, he posted his provocative infographic resume online and launched a social media campaign. The results? 4 job interviews, a contract with Coke, an offer to co-found a startup, and a couple of dates. Hagen Blount joins us by phone from somewhere between Boston and New York City. Welcome to Career Buzz.
Hey, thanks, Mark. I appreciate it.
So, Hagen, what are you doing now in your career?
I always answer that with, "That's a good question," and then dead silence. I am co-founding a Twitter application. I really can't talk about that too much. We really haven't put anything together. That's the next iteration of my career right there.
And what do you like about it and the way it's unfolding right now?
I like the people that I'm going to be working with. There are guys that I actually, one guy that I met through a friend who is in the food scene in New York. I also write a food blog called Wandering Foodie. And I met him at a brunch in January, which was pretty fun. And then he actually introduced me to his partner. And turns out when I told his partner about some of the initiatives that I was kind of thinking about executing, he's like, "You got to talk to Greg." I did. Went back and started talking to him. We're forming a business.
Right on. Now, tell us about what happened here. There's a picture on your site, and I do want listeners to look at your site because you have this infographic resume. So if listeners want to either email me or tweet once you look at Hagen's resume, go to HagenBlount.com and you can tweet either at CareerCycles or email me mark@careercycles.com and I'll put your comments on the air. But on your site, Hagen, there's a picture of you wearing this sandwich board that says unemployed social media strategist will tweet for food. Now, how did that happen? How did that come about?
I actually thought that it would be interesting to put two things together as far as like what's traditional job. What does a traditional job search look like? Trying to go back as far as possible, just thinking like what other methods have worked well. I think sandwich board would be interesting. I actually saw somebody with a sandwich board with this psychic, as a guy, he was obviously not the psychic. He might have been like a homeless guy just getting extra money in New York City or something. He was standing on the corner advertising for the psychic. I mean, it was just. I don't know how much he got paid a day, but he must have paid something. So I figured, well, this must work. If there's enough people to warrant paying this guy X amount of dollars a day, this must actually work. So I decided to make a sandwich board the first day. I was going to go out there, and I was actually going to, send out tweets for donations. Like, people were going to, drop a quarter, and I was going to tweet whatever they wanted. What ended up happening was that people were more excited about, getting me to work on their stuff, to do contracts for whatever kind of social media initiative they had. And, it was the first day I actually got a couple contracts, one contract that took me a whole day to do. So I was out there for a couple hours. Somebody approached me with something that they needed done. I told them the price. And the next day I was in all day working on it. And so it wasn't a lot of time standing outside with a sandwich board. I probably stood out there for a total of like 12 hours. Still have it. I haven't had the need to, don the board again.
So the idea was actually to be like a social media busker, and you were going to tweet for money. That was the original idea.
Right.
Didn't even think it was going to be a kind of job search or attracting prospective employers to give you contracts. And something unexpected happened, right?
Yeah, I thought it was like it was more fun. I thought that it was going to be. I thought that it could be press worthy and get picked up because it's not very often that somebody does that. somebody that pitched the story to the New Yorker. They didn't bite on it. I got enough press throughout. I've been on Monster.com, been on Mashable a couple times, been on a bunch of job sites in foreign countries. I didn't really expect to get a whole bunch of offers. I just thought, I might be able to go out for a couple hours and, somebody might think I'm interesting or want me to speak to them. But then in the first 15 minutes, that proved that it was a dumb idea. And, of course, all the rage now is pivot, so I totally pivoted and was doing something different, like within the first 20, 30 minutes of being outside.
Now, how far back does your interest in social media go? It looks like when you look at your infographic resume, you see all kinds of interesting things there. And social media is a relatively new thing, but how far back does your interest go and what launched it?
I've kind of been, I guess I've been in like marketing for a long time. I really haven't been in a situation where I've been, social media is so new. I guess when you try to say, how long have you been in social media? I've been in social media for 3 years. But that's how long anybody's really been in social media. I started out that I was thinking about, I worked at this company called American Tower. I was buying cell phone towers. When I left, I thought, if restaurants aren't using Twitter correctly, if they're not using Facebook to advertise to the point where they can get more fans, more likes, I thought I was going to kind of grab that and help people out with that, and help people start doing Facebook and Twitter correctly. Because I knew a little bit about it. I didn't know, I knew as much about it as anybody did at that time.
Hagen, we're just having a bit of a hard time hearing you. If you could really speak up, I guess the cell phone connection isn't great with us. So just fill that in. And also, can you bring us to the point of the infographic resume? Most listeners won't have heard of this term infographic, and yet you've done this very cool thing. You've got your whole story on it. You've got a mission statement. You've got logos next to each one of the jobs that you've had. You have kind of fun, number things. There's so many different things on that resume. How did that come about?
I actually was talking to a guy named John Cropper. He's an entrepreneur, and he showed me kind of a proof of concept for his site. Actually, it was almost done, I guess. He showed me this website that he was doing called Craven Hall. It's not up yet. I guess it's going to be launching in September or so. The website for entrepreneurs. And he was showing me all about how he thought what he wanted his students to graduate with. He wanted them to graduate with a business, which would be awesome, and also have this kind of cool resume that would show exactly what they were doing. Now, this resume, he showed me a bunch of graphic design resumes, and these have been a little, if anybody has a resume for graphic design, obviously it's going to be a little bit different. And it's not going to be, the standard resume. So he showed me a bunch of these other resumes, and I thought, I think that's probably going to be the standard for resumes going into the future. So I decided to make one. And I thought that it was pretty, I didn't really think I was going to get the traffic that I did off of it. I just thought that was the future, and that was, where everything was going.
So what actually happened with that infographic resume? Did you get, who's it good for, and what happened when you put it out there?
When I put it out there, I just kind of threw it out to my friends, and I kind of posted it on my Facebook wall, and I asked a couple people to, hey, if you like this, tweet about it. And they were like, yeah, great. I went to sleep and didn't really think of anything of it. I was still working on it. When I woke up, I checked my analytics, and I had like 500 or 600 hits on my website. It turns out that it was super popular, and it got a bunch of people looking at it. I was pumped. Right then I knew I needed to publicize this. So I made sure that everybody that, you know, on my Facebook that I thought was influential. I was like, hey, can you post this to your Facebook wall and say, this is cool, you should check it out. They did. I asked, you know, a bunch of my friends on Twitter to tweet it, specifically, you know, reached out to them like, hey, would you please tweet this out as something that's cool? Like, I think people think it's cool. Like, if you think it's worthy of being tweeted or being shared on Facebook, can you share it? They did. So, you know, I didn't expect to get the response I did. You know, the only thing I did different than the graphic design resumes that were out there up until this point was put the QR code on it. So it really wasn't, I kind of stumbled into it. I added the QR code because I knew, okay, well, what do you do to make something interactive? Well, you put a QR code on it so somebody can jump on it and check it out. I've since kind of changed my stance about what the QR code is for. I want it to be a little bit more interactive and give somebody a little bit more. I think that some of the pieces of my resume, I do that, but I think I'd like to add more in the QR code, give somebody more immersive experiences who I am.
Well, what's an example of a way that somebody can interact with this infographic resume?
Trying to figure out. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, because you're talking about QR code and there's some way that people are going to interact or leave you a message or post a comment on it. So, you know, just for listeners who haven't seen it and don't know what that is, you know, how can people look at it and then interact with it?
I think that, well, I mean, you look at it and you're interacting. The only way to interact with a piece of paper is to take the take your phone and scan the QR code. And the QR code will bring you to... one will bring you to my portfolio, one will bring you to my press page. And before I had on there that it would bring you to a movie of me speaking about, you know, well, here's what I'm all about, here's why you're here. And that movie got pretty good traffic. It didn't get as, you know, I mean, I don't know how many hits that has, I haven't checked. But if you're trying to interact with a piece of paper, you know, the only way you can do it is to take your mobile device and scan something. And that's the QR code right there.
Yeah, yeah, and you have that right on the infographic resume.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, a financial institution, like we've had a guest on the show, I don't know if you heard, Hagen, who is in financial services, possibly a more conservative industry. Then there's advertising and marketing. You know, who is an infographic resume for? What can you expect to get out of it, and when should you not use an infographic resume?
Well, I mean, you know, if you're a CFO and you're looking for another CFO job, you can surely use an infographic resume. You want to show your progress and what you've done with the bottom line of the businesses that you've worked in. If you're somebody in social media, of course, you've seen the application that I've used for it. I think actually it would be better for somebody in the financial industry to use something like this. It might be more descriptive of, you know, how big of an impact they've had on the customers of their business and their shareholders. So I think that, you know, I can't imagine, you might bring it to me and say, you know, it's like, well, what is this person, you know, is this person not suited for this type of resume? It's just, that's where it's going, you know. It's going to be, in the future, more people are going to have this type of resume than the plain white paper resume. And if you say, well, you know, I'm a construction worker, I don't really need that. But you're probably right, you know. In 10 years, let's revisit that question, see what we say.
Right on.
Because the whole idea of a resume is to grab the attention of the reader to get somebody an interview. It's not to, you know, you're not going to get hired. I mean, I actually got a few job offers. Well, one particular job offer just from somebody looking at my resume and seeing it, checking out what I do. But, you know, most of the time you're not going to get a job offer from a resume. You're going to get somebody who wants to have you in for an interview, and then you're going to go from there. So the whole idea about a resume is supposed to catch somebody's eye. And as more and more people have to understand, well, you know, I got to do a little bit more with my resume, they'll figure it out.
Yeah, right on. Last question, Hagen, and then I got to let you go. But given some of the twists and turns in your own career story and the things that people would read on your infographic resume, what have you learned personally about making good career and life choices?
I think you have to be, you don't, if you're not afraid of who you are, then that's the best way. If you want to take something, if you build something and you think it's cool, then you better own it. You better own that thing, and you better, you know, make sure you think you're kicking ass. Because if you don't, then somebody's going to find you out. Somebody's going to think you're a phony. You know, when I did that sandwich board, you couldn't be afraid that somebody was going to see you, you know? That somebody was going to see me in the street, like, say, hey, you know, give me a quarter, I'll tweet something for you. You know, it's like, that's not exactly what my plan was. But, yeah, you can't be afraid of that. You got to own what you are, who you are, what you're all about, and then go forward from there, and you'll be fine.
That's great advice. Hagen Blount, thank you so much for joining us here on Career Buzz. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark.
All right, bye for now.
Bye.
That was Hagen Blount talking to us by cell phone. Apologies for the line wasn't great. He's somewhere between Boston and New York City right now. And if you want to check out that infographic resume we were talking about, have a look at his site and let me know what you think of it. It's Hagen, H-A-G-A-N, Blount, B-L-O-U-N-T.com. And you click on the resume there. And if you have a comment on it, email me at mark@careercycles.com or tweet at careercycles. Love to hear what you thought. We have a few minutes left, and I want to come back to our first guest, Elen Vukovic, who is the Associate Dean in the Faculty of Business, Arts, and Design at George Brown College. First of all, Elen, what did you think of Hagen's comments there?
Absolutely. Near the end there, what he was talking about in terms of what what came to my mind was, for example, in my role, I'll often have the opportunity to meet with a student who's gone through a mock interview process and is presenting his or her cover letter and resume to me. And number one, I still very much insist on a timeliness of the appointment. If they've been scheduled to arrive at 11 and they arrive at 11:15, it's like, sorry, come back another time. So again, that never get a second chance to make a first good impression. Hagen's comments about a CFO potentially using the notion of an infographic resume to illustrate his or her accomplishments, that would be something that would complement and or add value to whatever that individual's reputation might already be on the street. And then finally, the notion of owning it. Again, I've had meetings with students where they bring the resume and the cover letter, but they actually forget to bring a pen to write down the notes and the feedback that I provide. And so, again, there's that opportunity to have a face-to-face with someone, and you really don't want to be there saying, would you write that note for me? You don't want to send that impression.
Absolutely.
You want to own it. You are there. You own your career. You own the perception of what other people think you're all about.
Yeah, absolutely. And being authentic. What I liked also what he said at the end there, build it, own it, otherwise, you know, you're phony. He said, like, the contrast is phoniness, and I think that's the point, is that we are who we are. You have to authentically be communicating about who you are. And if you're trying to present yourself as somebody who you're not to get a job, which people sometimes do, you know, it can backfire.
Absolutely. And I think that's where you actually also have to draw a little bit of that line between business and art, if you will. I think sometimes people get it too blended. There are certain maxims that still very, very much work in particular sectors. And, you know, I would suggest, again, financial services. It is one of those sectors.
Yes.
Where you do have to be careful about what you portray. And so things, again, I think there's been a lot of talk lately in career websites and so on about careful what you put out on Facebook, careful what you put out on LinkedIn. You know, people will be reading it in detail.
Can we take a couple of minutes to talk about the college? You're working at a growing college in the city of Toronto. There's a new campus coming up on Queen's Quay.
The Waterfront campus will be coming online September 2012. We're very excited about that. It's right next door to the Chorus building. So that is at the foot of Jarvis Street, east of the Jarvis on the Queen's Quay. And it will house our community services and health sciences programming. And the strategy there is also to pursue an interprofessional programming, which is ultimately to ensure that students, while they're studying in the arena of community services and health sciences, that they will also be, if you will, working side by side, so they'll understand better once they do become healthcare professionals what it takes.
Yes.
For a community services worker, shall we say, to interact with a gerontological worker or gerontology specialist.
So it seems like George Brown and other colleges are really working hard at stopping the leaks in the pipeline, if I can say it. There's a pipeline from school to work, and one of the guests on Career Buzz, Phil Jarvis, talks a lot about that and the research he's got about this leaky pipeline. And yet George Brown seems to have this reputation, at least in Toronto, your advertising campaign, is Brown gets you the job, or 9 out of 10 grads get the job, and all of that stuff. And there's been word out in Ontario that we've seen that the Ontario Ministry is going to change its funding, and it's going to make funding for post-secondary dependent more on student success and employment. Exactly. How is that changing the landscape in post-secondary education?
I'll talk about two specific things that I'm actually involved in. One is there have been a lot of announcements about a province-wide credit transfer system that would ultimately allow, for example, if you're a student in an accounting 2-year diploma in a college in Sault Ste. Marie, that you would then be able to transfer seamlessly into a 4-year degree at a university somewhere in the province. So those are the kinds of initiatives that are actively underway. In fact, at the Heads of Business Operating Group, which I'm a former chair of, we are actively in the process of establishing a province-wide articulation agreement specifically for accounting programs. And the other thing I would like to mention is just, again, that whole notion of an applied education versus theoretical. Community colleges in the Ontario system have always been at the forefront of that notion of an applied
yes.
education. It's not just blue collar, it's applied education in accounting programs, in nursing, in computer technology, in business school programs in general. So one last comment I'll make is that, for example, in our business administration marketing diploma programs at George Brown College, our students are working with real clients, doing real consulting already as early as the second or third year of the program. So yes, many of them do go on and will be even more successful in their careers if they go on and complete a degree as well and or a master's. But getting that early exposure to working directly with a client is so important because you get the feedback and you know what works and what doesn't work.
Well, that question about what works in post-secondary is a great question, especially as it relates to people's careers and lives. We maybe have to have you back on Career Buzz to talk about that another time. Let me finally ask a personal question back to your career story, Elaine. Given all the twists and turns in your story, from sports to financial services to education, including all the volunteer stuff and the wonderful music that you make, what can you share with listeners about what you've learned about making good career and life choices?
Well, I think you keep busy. Number one is an employer and or they always say, what is the old adage, give someone who's super busy something and you can be sure that it gets done.
Yes.
Something like that. Of course, I'm probably not phrasing it properly. But stay busy. Stay true to your intent. Set goals. Even if you're in a, you may hit a down cycle in your life due to other circumstances, nothing really to do is purely with your career, but there's things going on in your family, your personal life, you're worried about a friend in another part of the world has something going on. Those keep busy, stay involved in, and do an inventory. I really do have a practice or a habit of at least once a year, if not more, just simply sitting down with a notebook and going, okay, looking at 4 broad categories: family, personal, self, and professional. Where am I at? Am I doing something on all 4 of those quadrants? I guess it's sort of Jungian. It's sort of the
holistic,
one.
It's holistic.
It's holistic. And it's the one way that I box myself in.
Great. Elaine Vukovic, thank you so much for joining us here.
Thank
on
you,
Career
Mark.
Buzz.
Thank you very much Career for the Buzz. Opportunity.
You've been listening to Career Buzz. It's the show that empowers lives, enriches careers, and energizes organizations here on CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm your host, Mark Franklin, and you can find out more about me at careercycles.com. 2 other hosts of Career Buzz are Leanne Sachs at livinginthemoment.ca and Louisa Jewell at positivematters.com. If you have any comments on today's show, please email me at mark@careercycles.com. Thanks to my guests, Hagen Blount, Elaine Vukovic. Technical production today was by Julian Dunn. An MP3 of today's show is available from the Career Buzz link on careercycles.com. Catch Career Buzz every Friday at 11 a.m. here on CIUT. That's it for today's live version of Career Buzz. Thanks for listening.
Tired dust forms my dreams. The heart grows old. Yeah.